ask you a couple of questions as we begin today. How do you feel like your managing skills are? Do you feel you're a good steward, a good manager of the assets and the resources that God's given to you? How do you do with the money, and how do you do with the things? If on your spreadsheet, how do you look, you know, as far as your managerial skills for your own resources and the resources you have available to you? For example, if you looked at your taxes, from where do you get your biggest tax deduction? That kind of gives you an idea of where your money's going. And how about if you looked at your checkbook? What would that show you as far as your being a person who is very thrifty and very frugal, or being very, very wasteful? Or are you a generous person, or are you a stingy person? If God audited you right now, how would you show up? Now, I can't imagine anybody saying, man, I'm terrible at this. I stink at this. But do we sometimes stink at this? So that's what we're going to be talking about today. Now, what we're in here in our Luke study is that we're in a chapter change. And I've hopefully taught you that because the chapters change does not mean the context does, right? And this is what we have here. As soon as Jesus finished telling the parable of the older brother, he moves right into this. He starts telling this particular parable. It's interesting. You know, we don't associate those things together, but it's sandwiched in between here, between two thoughts. In verse 3 of chapter 15, what it said there was he began to tell this parable because the Pharisees, the religious people, were muttering. And they were muttering because he was welcoming tax collectors or outcasts and sinners into his life. And he was touching their lives. And next week, what we're going to see is they were sneering at him. So this, what we're looking at today, is going to be said to the disciples. But I want you to understand the background of it. The background of it is Jesus is still talking to these Pharisees, these religious people. So let's take a look and see what we're going to be looking at today. Luke chapter 16, verses 1 through 8. Jesus told his disciples, so that's us, there was a rich man whose manager was accused of wasting his possessions. So he called him and asked him, what is this I hear about you? Give me an account of your management, because you cannot be manager any longer. In the words, mortal words, of Donald Trump, you're fired. The manager said to himself, oh no, what am I going to do? What shall I do? Do now. My master is taking away my job. I'm not strong enough to dig, and I'm ashamed to beg. I know, an epiphany. I know. I know what I'll do so that when I lose my job here, people will welcome me into their houses. Now, that is the centrality of this story that Jesus is telling us here. This is the center part. Got to get that part. So he called in each one of his master's debtors. He asked the first, how much do you owe my master? 800 gallons of olive oil, he replied. The manager told him, well, take your bill, sit down quickly, and make it for 400. Man, it's 50%. He's just ripping off his master here, right? Then he asked the second, and how much do you owe? 1,000 bushels of wheat, he replied. He told him, take your bill and make it 800. He's ripping his master off. And here is what Jesus wants us to get. And the master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. What? Really? Is Jesus telling us that we should applaud this guy who's dishonest? How would you like this guy working for you? I mean, no, he's a snake in the grass, right? He needs his head stomped rather than applaud. So what's going on here? Is Jesus telling us to applaud this guy and commend this guy because he's sharp, shrewdly sharp, and dishonest? Not exactly. So we're going to unpack it a little bit. This is one of the most complex and most confusing stories that Jesus ever told. And in all the stories that he told, this is the most puzzling. And a lot of teachers will actually just skip it, because it can't make sense of it. You know, it sounds like you're telling people to be dishonest, but not really. So we're going to unpack it. But why does Jesus say this guy was applauded, this guy was commended? Why? Because there's something good that we can learn from this crafty crook. And that's what we're going to be looking at now. Now, most of you know what a parable is. You've heard me talk about it, but bear with me because I'm setting up a point that I want to make as I tell you once again. It's going to come on the screen for you, the definition of it in the Greek. It's a parabole. And what a parable or a parabole is it means to lay alongside one another. So that's what we're doing. So we're to lay alongside of it and compare ourselves to it and see where we need adjustments. But it's also juxtaposition, which means to get really close together, really right up against it, so we can see. Now, and also, what's interesting in that definition is like ships in battle. Now, it makes a lot of sense when you think about it. See, what Jesus does, and he's a master at it, he sort of slips up alongside of us, he sails up alongside of us in a story. Now, the story's non-threatening, right? I mean, what's the story going to do? Right? It's not going to hurt anything. We're defenseless. We're not expecting to get blasted here. And then he starts this story, and he starts blasting his cannons into our hearts and into our lives. And we really don't know the damage that's been done until he sails off. And we look back and say, whoa, what'd he say? And this is one of those things here. And he's a master at that. And so here he comes, and he's going to be blasting in our hearts today to see what damage he can do for us for the kingdom's sake. Blast some world out of us, hopefully. And I hope that's what happens to us here. Now, what Jesus did as in his ministry is he told 38 parables, or 38 stories in parabolic form. Some parables had more than one story to it, as we looked at last time with in our prodigal series. There were four different stories that were related in this one parable. But there were 38 stories that Jesus told. What's interesting about that is 19 of those stories concerned money, concerning possessions, concerned resources. Why did Jesus talk so much about money? Because money is so important. Because money has such an influence in our lives. When he said this, he says you can't serve both God and money, but it's really not money in when you look at the original. It's mammon. And what mammon is not only money, it includes money, but it includes all your resources, it includes all your possessions, it includes all the things that you have resource of and resource to and that you manage in your life. And you can't serve both. Because here's what he says, you're going to hate the one, you're going to love the other, you're going to despise the one and you're going to serve the other. You can't serve them both. So when things kind of come to a place of pressure on you, which both are making demands, when your possessions are making a demand on you and God's making a demand on you, which way are you going to go? Because you can't go both. And this is what he's saying. It can be your master. And so the reason that Jesus talks so much about money and possessions and those type of things is because it can rule us and mess our lives up. And so he spent a lot of time talking about this. I heard a really interesting statistic that if we were to live to be 85 years old, and I will, if we live to be 85 years old, then 50 years of our lives is spent on thinking about or dreaming about money. Now, I don't want to think that way about myself. I don't want to think that I spend 50 years of my life thinking about or dreaming about my possessions and money and those kinds of things. So this is why Jesus talks so much about it, because it's such an important factor and an impressive factor in our lives. It can mess us up or it can make us. It's according on how we manage it, right? Okay, so there, we got to get it. So here's this guy, and he's the manager. Now, he's dishonest. He's been found out. They did the spreadsheet on him, and they found on his spreadsheet didn't balance. And so he's fired. But he's the star of the story. This is what's interesting. He's the star of the story. And it's from this dishonest guy that Jesus wants us to learn something here. So how do we relate in this? How do we parabole this? How do we allow this thing to blast into our hearts and maybe help us a little bit? How do we do this? Well, because you're a manager. You manage your life. You've been given life by your master. What are you doing with it? Are you wasting it? Are you using it to its full potential? Are you using it as a resource? Are you wasting your master's gift to you? And it's not only that. Everything that we've got, we've really been, if we look at it correctly, it's been given to us by God. You know, the money that we have, the possessions that we have, the resources that we have all been given to us by God. And people say, not me. God didn't give me nothing. I earned every dime I've ever gotten. You ever heard something like that? I earned every dime. Well, I tell you what, I really plead with you and beg you don't have that attitude, because you might hear what this guy heard. You're fired. Now let's see how well you do. Now let's see what you can earn. Now let's see how you make out. See, the attitude that every one of us should have, the Christ followers, the disciples of Jesus Christ, every one of us, our attitude should be that when God put us together, when he formed us in our mother's rooms, womb, in Psalms 139, he and fearfully and wonderfully made us together, like Nancy's talking about today. When you're fearfully and wonderfully made like that, God put into us all these talents and these abilities, and he gave one 3 talents, and he gave one 2 talents, and he gave one talent, and he wants us to take those talents and use those talents in our lives so that we can do something and that we can have these resources to manage for our master. And that's the right kind of attitude that we should have. So how do we do? See, you're the star of your life. You're the star of the possessions that you manage. How you do? Are you a dishonest manager? I was thinking about that thought and just pondering it. And I fear that there may be some dishonest manager in all of us. That we have squandered and wasted so much of what God's given us. And if a spreadsheet was done on us, I don't know how we'd look. So this is what we're going to be looking at. What do we do? How do we handle this? What should we be doing with the resources that the Lord's given us? Now, I'm going to read to us again verses 8 and 9. And I want to read verse 9 several times through in another translation also. But I want to unpack some things here for us so that we can get some truths out of this amazing parable and see if we can unpack it, because I'm not skipping it, right? Okay, so here we go. Verses 8 and 9. It says, the master commended the dishonest manager because, here's why he's commended. He had acted shrewdly. For the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind, and I'm going to come back to this in just a second, than are the people of the light. I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourselves. For who? For yourselves, so that when it is gone, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings. All right, I want to talk about that just a second. See, the reason that this dishonest manager was applauded and commended, because he was in this position. What am I going to do? I have lost my job. What in the world am I going to be able to do here? You know, he said, I'm a white collar guy. You know, I'm an upper management person. What am I going to do? I'm too weak to dig. I'm too ashamed to beg. What am I going to do? I know what I'll do. I got it. So he came up with this shrewd idea. And the shrewd idea is why he was commended, not because of his dishonesty. The shrewd idea that he got was this. He said, okay, I'm going to get all these guys together that owe my master. And I'm going to make a deal with them. I'm going to get them to owe me. I'm going to do something for them so they'll have to repay me. We'll develop this relationship, this friendship. And so this is what he did. So he got them all together, and he cut a deal with one for 50%. He cut another one for off 20%, and he made this deal. So that, here's why, he did it. Now, I want you to make sure you get this part. You see, he didn't make the deal so he could embezzle the money for himself. What he did was he made the deal, used the resources available to him to ensure his end, to ensure his future, so that he would be welcomed into the houses when he lost his position, when he lost his job. He would have a place to go. He ensured his end. Now, that's why he was applauded. And that's what the Lord is really wanting you and I to get, that we don't think about our end. Oh, we might think about retiring. We might think about dying and making arrangements at the funeral home. But that's not your end. And so what Jesus is saying here, this is why he was commended, because of this shrewd idea, this wise thinking that he had. Now what Jesus says, a day will come when it is gone. So that when it is gone, he said, then you can assure yourself to be welcomed in your eternal dwellings. That's what he said, right? When it's gone, you will have used it so wisely, so shrewdly, that you will have ensured a welcoming in your eternal dwellings. Now, I think that's such a novel thought. I mean, Jesus just gave us something here that we don't think about. He said, Delbert, you will be welcomed when you go to heaven. But not only that will I be welcomed when I go to heaven, but my welcoming committee will be directly connected with the people that I have used my worldly wealth to help, to bless, to get the burdens of debt of the life that we have off of them, to help them in some way. My welcome will be directly connected with how I have been a shrewd manager of the worldly possessions that I have. I want us to make sure we get it. See, Judy and I, we're going to have a big welcoming committee. We know we are. And here's why. For 30 years, we have given a percentage of our income every week. That's a lot of weeks, 30 years. Every week, we have given a percentage to alms. And what alms does here is it just goes straight into helping people. It goes, we don't even know where some of it goes because and I'll talk more about it later, but because that's what it's used for. It's used to help people that are sick or people that are out of work or people that are in need or whatever. We've done that for 30 years. That's a lot of money. 3% of our income for 30 years has gone for that. But also we've taken opportunities along the way as well. We've taken opportunities when in missions, for example. If an opportunity to come came by that we could operate and invest into missions, then we did that as well. We touched that because that's what we wanted to do. And then there's been several times in all of our times that our lives that people have just fallen into bad times. And we've been able to help them. We've been able to assist them because I want to be a good steward. I want to be a good manager of the resources. And what Jesus is wanting us to understand here, and I'm going to say it in just a second. I want you to hear me now, though. He says, you need to do this intentionally. I'll point it out here in just a second. But he says, use your worldly wealth. Use it intentionally. Have a plan, a shrewd plan, so that you will be welcomed when you enter your eternal dwellings. How you doing? How you doing? Are you investing in that area of your life? You may be laying money up for your retirement, but are you investing in your eternal dwellings? Are you sure that there's going to be a welcoming? You will be welcomed there. This is what I want us to see today. See, we don't think like this. And this is what I want us to understand. Jesus is telling us here, you start thinking like this. Start thinking supernaturally. Get your head out of the world and get your head into heaven. Start thinking in a way that's beyond how the world thinks. And this is all going to unfold as we work through this passage. We're going to see this. I want to read that again. Verse 9. I want to point out something he says here. I tell you. Now, who's saying this? Jesus, right? Christ, God in flesh. God is saying this, so it must be true, don't you think? So I tell you, he's making an emphasis here. He's saying, get this, understand this, I'm telling you this. Get your head wrapped around this. Listen intently, get this right. I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for who? Yourselves. I'm going to really get into that in a second, just keep pointing it out. So that when it is gone, you will be welcomed into the eternal dwellings. Now, Jesus isn't forecasting our financial disaster here. That's not what he's doing. He's speaking of the inevitable. When you die, I don't care how much you've accumulated, it's gone as far as you're concerned. It has run its course. It's run out. It no longer will benefit you at all. It's gone. He's not forecasting our financial disasters. What he's forecasting is the inevitable. That's what he's doing. How are you doing here? How do you do? Are you using the time you have and the resources that you have right now? Are you using these resources for your eternal dwellings? Are you using them wisely? Because one day, it'll be gone. One day, it'll be gone. Now, he's emphasizing something here. He says, I tell you, use it this way. Use it to make friends. Use it for the purpose of people. Use it this way. Now, be generous is what he's saying here. Have you ever known a generous person who didn't have a lot of friends? I mean, generous people, I mean, think about it a second. Generous people have a a lot of friends, right? I mean, they just do that. Like, they like go together. Stingy people don't have a lot of friends. But generous people have a lot of friends. Who's the most generous person you've ever known? Just think about it. So, the most generous person that I have ever known in my life was my mother. She was the most generous person that I've ever known in my life. And I want to tell you a couple of stories about her. But she was always giving you something. If you drove up in her yard and you were about to leave, she'd come running out. She'd say, wait a minute. She'd run back in the house and she'd go find something to give you. This is just how she was. She was worked into her. It was made into her. Her and Daddy, they would go up. We lived in Griffin, and they would go up to Forest Park, where the state farmers market is. And they would go up there, and they would get all kind of produce and things, and they'd go give it away. But this specific time, she and my mom and my dad and our neighbor named Bessie was with them, and Mama was cruising the market, and this guy cut her a deal with watermelons. Now, I'm not talking about these little seedless guys that we, see a lot now. I'm talking about these big melons like we used to see, these big, big things like this. This guy wanted to get out of there, I suppose. He wanted to go home, whatever. But anyway, he cut Mama a deal on these watermelons, a truckload of watermelons. There were 72 watermelons, as I recall. So Daddy backs up there, and they're loading the watermelons, and Mom's out counting them to make sure they don't cheat her. That's how Mom was. And Bessie looks at Dad and says, Delbert, I'm a junior. So she says, Delbert, talking to my dad, said, what in the is Renee going to do with all those watermelons? Well, everybody knew Mama's not going to eat 72 watermelons, So Daddy, as he always did with concerning my mom, he looks at Bessie and he says, Bessie, she'll do with them whatever she wants to do with them. And everybody knew what that meant. She drove all over Spalding. She drove all over Spalding County giving away watermelons. If you were her friend and she knew where you lived, here they came. And they're going to give you a watermelon or two. And she drove all over the county. They come driving into our yard. I mean, Daddy's truck was like, he had a long bed, old GMC truck, and that thing was like this, going down the road with 72 watermelons in the back of it. But they come driving in our driveway, you want a watermelon? Yeah, okay. So this is, I wouldn't do that. I'm a generous person, but I wouldn't do that. Would you? I mean, think about that. That's generous. I mean, not only do you buy the watermelons and give them away, but you deliver them. I mean, this was my mom. And a couple of times a year, she would do this. She would stay up really late at night, and she'd make pastries, especially at Christmas time or Valentine or maybe Easter, whatever. But a couple of times a year, she would just do this. She'd stay up really late at night baking. And she would make these pies, these little apple pie turnovers and candies and cookies and all this stuff. And then she'd put them in these little packages. She'd wrap them up really pretty, put little bows and little cards on them and all this stuff. And she'd put them in a box. And then she'd go all over town giving these things away. She'd go to the bank. She'd go to the state patrol office. She'd go to the tag office. And she, now this is back when tags were, and everybody had to get their tags at the same time. Remember that? You didn't do it by your birthday like you do now. You had to go stand in line. So she'd go and she'd do all this stuff. She'd go into the bank with this box of stuff. And she'd start at one station and she'd work all the way around, taking over and giving these little presents to people. People were smiling and I wouldn't do that. I'm generous, but I mean, she was like, crazy generous. And she was doing this. People were smiling all over the place. And it didn't matter if she knew you or not. If you were in there, you got something. she was just going to give you something because it wasn't important for Mom to know who you were. It was important to Mother that you knew who she was. Because she wanted you to welcome her. When you saw her coming, she wanted you to smile. She wanted you to welcome her. When Mama died, I just have to know, man, there was one woman welcomed in heaven when my mom went. But that's not the story that where I'm going to end up with. Is it? Well, it was emphasis here, what Jesus says, I tell you, make friends so that. There's a response from generosity that's far-reaching. Everybody was always doing stuff for Mama. If she needed her roof worked on, somebody would come fix her roof. If she needed her car worked on, somebody would come fix her car. If she needed a garden spot plowed, somebody would come do her garden. I mean, people were just finding ways to repay Mama because of her little packages and watermelons and things like that that she would give. They would do big things for her all the time. It was a response. But it wasn't just her. There was a run over for this generosity. If you're associated with, connected with a generous person, it'll spill over on you. It spilled over on us a lot of times. You know, I recall a time I was pulled over by a state patrol. I think it happened two times. But anyway, I know that happened one time. I was pulled over by a state patrol officer. And I don't know what I was doing wrong. But anyway, he completely pulled me over. And he walks up and I'm handing my driver's license. You know, and he looks at it and he reads it. And he looks at me and he reads it and he looks at me. And he says, "You Rainey's boy?" I said, "Yes, sir." And he hands me back my license. And he says, "Slow down, put your seatbelt on, and tell your mother I said hello." "Yes, sir." It was like that. We'd go in the tag office. And again, that was back when you had to wait in line to get your tags. And of course, Mama's already gone through. Make sure she went through first, you know. And so we'd go in and we'd be standing there. And so they would recognize me as Rainey's boy. And so they would get my attention. So I'd go to the up where they were. They'd take me off to the side a little ways. And they would serve me, give me my tag, and I was out of there because I got the spillover. You know, generosity, well, if you're a generous person and you're doing what we're talking about here today, being shrewd stewards, shrewd managers of what God's given you, it's not only going to bless you. It's going to bless your children. It's going to bless people that are all around you. You're going to be recognized as somebody's son or daughter, or you're going to get this spillover that's happening because somebody's generous. Generosity is big in the eyes of God. He'll make sure you get blessed back. But here's really why I wanted to tell you this. When we had Mother's funeral in 93, it was at a big place. I mean, there, it was the biggest funeral home in the county. And it was big. It was about as big as this room, just the sanctuary area where we had it. And it was overflow. I mean, they had the family off to the side over here a little bit. The place was filled. People were standing in the back. They were out there watching it on closed circuit television. It was just amazing how many people had come. We should have had multi-services for her funeral. It was like a dignitary had died. Mother wasn't an elected official. She probably could have been, but she wasn't an elected official. And the procession to the funeral, to the graveside, it couldn't hold the parking area. There couldn't hold all the cars. It was like a mile long. It was absolutely amazing. And when Mom went, you just know that there was a welcoming committee for her because of her generosity. It's awesome what generosity will do. It's awesome what it'll do. Now, what I want to do is I'm going to read you this passage from the King James Version this time, because the words change a little bit and it gives us a little more insight into it. Now, I want to show you something on it. Go ahead and put it up for me. While I'm thinking about it, somebody asked me a couple of weeks back to let you know what version or translation that I'm using. I'm always using the NIV. The reason is because a lot of scholars who really understood Greek, Hebrew, and Aramaic got together and put this together. So it's not one guy's interpretation or just a few people's interpretations. It's a lot of sharp guys putting this together. So that's why I use the NIV. But when I use another translation, I'll do what I did here. I'll put it in parentheses so that you will know what translation I'm using. Other than that, it's always the New International Version. So with that said, let me read. "And the Lord commended the unjust steward, because he had done wisely." Now that's where the NIV version puts in there, shrewdly. "For the children of this world are in their generation wiser." Now I want to work here just a second. I want to make sure you get what he's saying here. While they are alive, while those that are far from God, while the lost, while the unrighteous are alive in their generation, in their lifetime, they are wiser, smarter, wiser, shrewder than the children of light. What does that mean? We are supposed to be the enlightened ones. We're supposed to be the children of light. But what Jesus is saying here is that the unrighteous, people far from God, are far wiser while they're alive and are capable of doing something with the resources they manage than we are. I want you to see this word and that's used, that's translated wise and translated shrewd in the Greek. It's the Greek word phrenos, and what it means is intelligent, wise, clever, mindful of one's interest. I want to slow down now and inject that the way Jesus said. Jesus says that the lost, the unrighteous people far from God are more intelligent, they're wiser, more clever, they're more mindful of their interest for their end time, for working out their end process, for their end, than we are. We don't think supernaturally. We don't think heavenly. We got our head in the world and not in heaven. And Jesus is telling us here, here's what I want you to understand. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to get your heads right. I want you to understand this. I want you to start thinking heavenly. Now, does it have to be this way? Or should it be this way? No. This is why Jesus is telling us this. This is why Jesus is teaching this. This is why he's saying this. You got to be shrewd about your end. Use while you're alive. Use your generation. Use your resources now while you can, before they're gone, to ensure your welcome into heaven. This is what Jesus is teaching us here. Now, this honest manager was commended basically for doing three shrewd things. He was, first of all, he was shrewd with the resources he had access to. And the second thing that he was shrewd was with people. And the third thing that he was shrewd with was concerning a plan and his end. All successful people are concerned with these three things. Everyone, if you're successful, you are concerned, intensely concerned with these three things. You're intensely concerned with the resources that you have availed to you. You're intensely concerned with people because you know people make it happen. Without people, it's not going to work. It's not going to happen. And the third thing that you're intensely concerned is a plan. And successful people always have a plan. They know where they're going. They know what they want to end up doing. And Jesus is saying, you got to be like this. So how are you? How are you doing here? Do you have a plan? Do you have an intentional plan? Are you doing it intentionally? He said, here's what you do. Hear me. Listen, hear what I'm saying to you. Do this. Use your worldly wealth intentionally to invest in the lives of people so that it'll work out for you. This is what he's teaching us. Do you do that? How shrewd are you? Interesting thing, we read that Jesus said to his disciples, he was sending them out, he was sending his disciples out, and he said this most interesting thought, and it's going to make sense to you now more than probably ever before. But we're disciples and we're all sent out, so we can definitely relate to this. In Matthew chapter 10 and verse 10, he says here, I am sending you out like sheep among wolves. Therefore, be what? Be as what? Shrewd as what? Snakes. I never wanted to be compared to a snake. But Jesus says it's a good thing. If you do the other part as well. If you're also as innocent as a dove. If you're also maintain your spirituality, it's good to be shrewd, but you can be shrewd and spiritual. And this is what he's saying here. Have you ever observed a snake? I'm not talking about a person. I mean a real snake. Have you ever observed one? You know, usually we'll run from them, but I had the opportunity to have a pet shop one time, and I had a lot of fish, beautiful fish, birds and dogs and cats and all this stuff. But the, you know what my main attraction was? Snakes. Saturday was snake feeding day. People would line up to come watch the snakes be fed. It was amazing. I couldn't keep snakes. I couldn't keep stuff to feed them. But at any rate, Jesus says, okay, and if you ever observe them, what a snake will do is they'll just lay out, and if they're not hungry, they'll just lay out and get some sun, just chill. You know, that's what a snake does. But when they get hungry, they'll position themselves and they'll coil up, and when the opportunity comes by, they get it. They inhale that opportunity. That's what a snake does. And so what Jesus is telling us here is position yourself in life. Use the resources that you have in life. Position yourself in life so that when an opportunity comes by to shrewdly use your resources in this dimension for your end, get it. Be shrewd like that. You can be shrewd and you can be spiritual. And this is what Jesus is saying. Be shrewd like that. And if you will, it's going to work out for you. I want to end with this specific verse of Scripture as we wind it down. And we'll talk out the rest of the time using this verse. It's a very familiar verse. I know everybody that's ever been to church more than 2 weeks has heard it. So you'll see it, but I believe it'll make more sense to us now probably than ever. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. Don't do that. That's what Jesus said. But store up for who? Now, who's all this for? Yourself. Now, see, here's what we think. We think, I'm just giving away my money. I'm just giving away my time. I'm just giving away my stuff. No. You may be helping somebody with your money or your stuff, but you're doing this for you. This is for you. We don't think of it that way because we got our heads in the world and not our heads in heaven. And what he's saying here, think how this works. Do this intently. Do this on purpose because what you're doing it for is you. Lay up for yourselves treasures in your eternal dwellings, treasure in heaven where moth or rust do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. And here's the part that I really want to kind of work with. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So where is your heart? Is your heart in heaven? Or is your heart in the world? Where's your heart? See, Jesus has made it clear. You cannot take this stuff with you, and there's going to be a time when it's gone. It just runs out. But if you manage it correctly, you manage it well, though it will run out, it can go on for you. Just because it ends in the natural form, it can go on in the spiritual form and be a treasure for you. You can't take it with you. We all heard that statement before. We never see a hearse pulling a U-Haul, right? Because you can't take it with you. But it can await you. Though you can't take it with you, if you manage it correctly and you manage it shrewdly, it can await you and a treasure in heaven. So I just want to challenge you with this. Do you do alms? Do you do alms? See, alms is taught in the Old and the New Covenant. It's taught in the Old Testament. This is what I was talking about that she and I have done for 30 years. In the Old Covenant, it's actually a tithe. It's a third year tithe that was to come into the storehouse, that was to go to take care of the widow, the orphan, the poor, the impoverished, the sick, the ill, all of the transient, and all those things that alms does. So they did that. That was a part of their worship. In the New Testament, it's just a given. Jesus in Matthew chapter 6 verses 1 through 4 doesn't say if you decide to pay alms. What does he say? He says when you give alms. It's a no-brainer to Jesus. This is just what you do if you're a Christ follower. Do you do it? Do you care about those people? Is your heart into it? Because where your heart is, there your treasure is. You'll know if your heart is right by where your treasure is. And if you don't have a heart for that, your mind is in the world. Your heart is in the world. How about missions? Is your heart into missions? When the opportunity comes by, do you seize it? You see, I'm more like that with my missions giving. Is I don't just regularly all every week give to missions. But what I do is when an opportunity comes by, I seize that opportunity. I'm shrewd with it. How about you? Is your heart in missions? You'll know by if your treasure is. Do you intently give to missions? How about somebody sick, home from the hospital? Do you care? Do you care that they're sick and incapable of maybe cooking and fixing? Do you care? Is your heart in that? See, you women, you can do baking and make your beans and your veggies and all this stuff and take them a supper. You're not doing it for them. Who are you really doing it for? Yourself? Oh, you're helping them, sure. But who's going to get the real benefit, the real treasure of this? You are. How about somebody that's down and out, going through a tough time in life? Maybe cutbacks at work or a bad time, lost a job, whatever. Maybe it's their fault, maybe it's not, but it doesn't matter. Do you care? Is your heart there? You'll know if your heart's there, if your treasure's there. And Jesus says, here's how you lay up treasure for yourself in heaven. Here's how you do it, is what he's telling us to do. See, Jesus doesn't want us to learn to be good stewards, to learn to be sharp with our finances so that we can increase our standard of living. He wants us to be shrewd and good managers of our resources so we can increase our standard of giving. Jesus gives us this amazing picture of being welcomed into heaven. We don't think like that. He says, I want you to start thinking like that. He says, but I want you to understand that you're being welcomed into heaven. The committee that will greet you and meet you in heaven is directly connected with how you manage your resources here and now in your generation. How you doing? How you doing? Are we dishonest managers? Or do we intentionally give to where the Lord wants us to give? Cannonball? It was to me. I hope it is to you. Let me pray for you.